All right, folks, get ready, because today we are diving into some serious brain food.
Oh, yeah.
We're tackling Aristotle's Metaphysics, Books 11.
Nice.
And let me tell you, this is not exactly light reading.
It's dense.
It's about as dense as a neutron star.
Yeah.
But don't worry.
We're here to help.
We're going to break it down.
Absolutely.
We're going to pull out the most mind-blowing bits.
That's right.
We're going on a quest for wisdom.
A quest for wisdom, yeah.
For the fundamental principles that govern reality itself.
That's it. That's it.
It gets pretty meta, so buckle up.
What I think is so captivating about Aristotle, especially this book,
yeah,
is that he tackles these huge questions head on.
Yeah.
Like, what is wisdom?
Right.
What does it even mean to be?
Mm-hmm.
Can we truly know anything for certain?
Whoa.
I mean, these questions have haunted philosophers for centuries,
mm-hmm.
and Aristotle's take on them is just, it's illuminating and provocative.
I'm already feeling a bit overwhelmed.
Really?
To be honest.
Okay.
Where do we even begin?
Well, that's a great question.
I keep seeing this phrase, first principles in the source material.
Yeah.
What's the deal with those?
That's a great place to start.
Okay.
Because for Aristotle, wisdom isn't just knowing a bunch of facts.
Right.
It's about grasping the foundational truths.
Okay.
The first principles that underpin all knowledge.
Okay.
He's searching for the bedrock upon which everything else rests.
So it's about seeing the forest for the trees,
yeah.
Getting to the core of how things work.
Yeah.
The underlying why behind the what.
Precisely. No, to give you an example,
okay.
Imagine you're trying to understand the movement of the planets. A physicist might describe their orbits and the forces at play, but Aristotle would argue that true wisdom lies in understanding the cause of that movement. What is the ultimate driving force that sets those celestial bodies in motion?
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
But speaking of causes,
yeah.
Aristotle was pretty adamant about rejecting his teacher. Plato's theory of forms, right?
Yes.
What was that all about?
The famous break between student and teacher.
Why was that such a big deal for him?
Well, Plato believed that there's this separate realm
yeah.
of perfect eternal forms.
All right.
Like, imagine a perfect horse blueprint that exists somewhere beyond our world.
Yep.
And all the horses we see are just imperfect copies.
Oh, okay.
Trying to live up to that ideal.
So there's this super horse out there somewhere
yeah.
that all other horses are aspiring to.
Kind of, yeah.
That's kind of a wild concept.
It is a wild concept.
What did Aristotle find so objectionable about that?
Well, for Aristotle, this whole idea of forms existing independently
yeah.
was just too abstract and, frankly, absurd.
Okay.
He argued that the form of a horse cannot exist apart from actual individual horses.
Okay.
The form is inherent in the thing itself, not floating around in some ethereal realm.
So no perfect horse dictating how all other horses should be. I have to admit, I'm kind of relieved.
I can understand that.
But why was Aristotle so against this idea?
Right.
It's not like it's hurting anyone.
Right. It might seem harmless on the surface,
yeah.
but Aristotle saw it as a dangerous distraction.
Okay.
By grounding knowledge in the reality we experience.
Okay.
The individual horses, the movements of the planets,
mm-hmm.
we can begin to understand the true nature of things.
Okay.
Their causes and their purposes.
Right.
Plato's forms, for Aristotle, were a detour on the road to wisdom.
That's interesting. It's like he's shifting the focus.
Yes.
From abstract ideals to the concrete reality in front of us.
Absolutely.
But this brings up another question.
Okay.
How did Aristotle grapple with the very concept of being?
Right.
I mean, what does it even mean for something to exist?
And that leads us to one of Aristotle's most challenging yet profound concepts.
Oh, right.
Being qua being.
Being qua being.
Don't let the fancy Latin scare you. It simply means the study of existence itself.
Okay.
It's not about any specific thing that exists.
Right.
But about the very idea of existence.
Mm.
What does it mean for something to be?
Okay, I can already feel my brain starting to melt a little.
Oh, come on.
We use the word be all the time.
We do.
But I've never really stopped to think about what it actually means.
Yeah.
Like, is there some sort of universal definition of being?
Right.
Or is it more complicated than that?
That's the crux of the issue.
All right.
Aristotle recognized that being has multiple meanings.
Okay.
And it isn't this simple one-size-fits-all concept.
Okay.
It can refer to a thing's essence, its existence,
okay.
its potential,
Right.
Even its accidental properties.
Okay.
Think about how we use the word in everyday language.
Right.
I am a musician.
Right.
That plant is healthy.
Mm-hmm.
The cat is on the mat.
Okay.
Each carries a slightly different meaning.
So it's not like there's this big being sign hanging over everything, right?
No.
It's more like being is this multifaceted concept.
Yes.
With layers of meaning that we need to unravel.
Precisely.
This is heavy stuff.
It is heavy stuff.
Okay.
But for Aristotle,
yeah,
understanding the different facets of being
mm-hmm.
is crucial for understanding reality itself.
Okay.
It's like trying to understand a complex machine.
Okay.
You can't just look at the finished product.
Right.
You need to examine the individual parts mm-hmm. and how they fit together.
Okay. I'm starting to see how this all connects.
Good.
But there's another piece of the puzzle I'm struggling with.
Okay.
The source material mentions that Aristotle had a bone to pick with those who believed that everything is in constant flux.
Yeah.
That there's no such thing as permanent truth.
Right.
Why was he so against that idea?
Well, he was taking aim at thinkers like Protagoras.
Okay.
Who famously claimed that man is the measure of all things.
Right.
This implies that truth is relative, subjective to each individual.
Mm-hmm.
There's no objective standard, no bedrock.
So if everything's always changing, like some cosmic game of musical chairs,
yeah.
Does that mean there's no point in searching for meaning or truth?
Wait.
Is it all just a swirling vortex of fleeting opinions?
Aristotle would say no.
Okay.
While he acknowledged that many things on Earth are subject to change.
Right.
You know, empires rise and fall, seasons shift, we age.
Yeah.
He argued that there are also enduring principles.
Okay.
Unchanging truths.
All right.
He pointed to the heavens, the sun, the moon, the stars as examples of things that seem to possess this eternal quality.
So while we're down here on Earth dealing with all the chaos and impermanence.
Right.
There's this cosmic ballet going on above us.
Yes.
A realm of order and constancy.
Exactly.
That's actually quite a beautiful thought.
It is. It is.
And for Aristotle,
yeah,
this enduring order points towards a deeper, unchanging reality.
Yes.
That lies beyond our immediate perception.
That's right.
He believed that by studying these seemingly internal things, we can gain insights into the very nature of being.
Uh-huh.
Into those first principles we talked about earlier.
Exactly.
I see. So it's like, he's saying that even though our lives might feel chaotic and unpredictable,
yeah,
there's a bigger picture where things are stable and make sense.
Right.
And by understanding those unchanging principles,
yeah,
we can find meaning and purpose in our own ever-changing lives.
That's the idea.
But how does this relate to Aristotle's ideas about movement and change?
That's a great segue.
Okay.
Aristotle didn't just observe change, he meticulously categorized it.
Okay.
He identified three types. Generation,
mm-hmm.
something coming into being,
okay.
destruction,
right.
something ceasing to be,
okay.
and motion,
right.
something changing from one state to another.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
But then there's this weird bit in the source material where he rejects the idea of change of change.
Change of change, yeah.
What the heck does that even mean?
It does sound like a riddle, right? What he's getting at is that change itself isn't a thing
okay.
that can undergo further change.
Hmm.
Think about it this way.
Okay.
Imagine someone recovering from an illness.
Right.
The change from sickness to health isn't something that can then itself become healthy or sick.
So change is like a process, an event.
Yes.
Not an object.
Right.
You can't have a change of a change.
Exactly.
Like, you can't bake a cake at a baking.
That's a good one.
That's actually pretty insightful.
It is.
And this leads us to another fascinating concept.
Okay.
That Aristotle grapples with.
Mm.
The infinite.
The infinite, yeah.
This has been a head scratcher for philosophers since, well, forever.
Oh, yeah.
Uh-oh, here comes another brain twister.
Okay.
I have a feeling this is going to go wild ride.
Buckle up.
Hold on tight.
So Aristotle argued that the infinite cannot exist as a separate, independent thing.
Okay.
Now, before you object.
Okay.
He's not saying that infinity doesn't exist at all.
Wait, so infinity exists, but it doesn't exist as a thing. How can something be both real and not a thing at the same time?
It's a very tricky concept.
This is making my head spin.
I know. I know.
Yeah.
Aristotle believed that infinity can exist as a potential.
Right.
But not as an actual thing.
Okay.
For example, we can always add another number to a sequence.
Right.
So in that sense, number is potentially infinite.
Okay.
but there's no actual completed infinity.
Right.
Like a number so big, it encompasses all numbers.
So it's like a horizon we can always approach, but never actually reach.
Yes.
We can imagine infinity, we can point towards it,
yeah,
but we can never fully grasp it.
That's a great way to put it.
Okay.
And this ties into Aristotle's thoughts on the limitations of human knowledge.
Okay.
He was humble enough to acknowledge that there are some things we simply cannot know with certainty.
Right.
No matter how hard we try.
I'm starting to see a pattern here.
What's that?
First, Plato's perfect forms get the boot.
Right.
Because they're not grounded in reality.
Yeah.
Then we learn that being is this multifaceted concept.
Yes.
That we can never fully wrap our heads around.
Uh-huh.
And now, even infinity,
yeah,
this ultimate concept of limitlessness,
yeah,
is relegated to the realm of potential.
That's right.
It's like Aristotle is systematically taking away all our comfortable certainties.
In a way, he is.
Yeah.
But it's not about tearing things down.
Okay.
It's about building a more solid foundation for knowledge.
Okay.
By acknowledging the limits of human understanding.
Right.
By focusing on the reality we can observe and reason about.
Yeah.
We open ourselves up to a different kind of wisdom.
Mm.
A wisdom rooted in humility.
Okay.
And a willingness to embrace the unknown.
Okay. I can definitely get on board with that.
Good.
It's refreshing to hear a philosopher talk about the importance of not knowing.
Yeah.
Of accepting the limits of our understanding.
That's a powerful idea.
But this brings up another question.
Okay.
If we can't know everything for certain, how do we even begin to make sense of the world around us?
And that brings us to another one of Aristotle's key distinctions.
Okay.
The difference between the essential and the accidental.
Hmm.
This might sound a bit abstract, but it's actually a very practical concept with huge implications for how we understand the world and our place in it.
Okay, lay it on me.
Right.
What's the difference between the essential and the accidental?
Right.
And how does it all connect to this idea of the limitations of knowledge?
Think of it this way. The essential properties of a thing are what make it what it is.
So,
for a human, that might include things like rationality,
mm-hmm,
the capacity for language, or a certain physical form.
Okay.
The accidental properties, on the other hand, are those that come and go without changing the fundamental nature of the thing.
Okay, so like the fact that I'm currently wearing a blue shirt is accidental.
Exactly.
It doesn't change the fact that I'm still me.
Right.
But my ability to think and reason, that's essential to my being human.
You got it. And Aristotle argued that there can't be a true science of the accidental.
Hmm.
It's inherently unpredictable and outside the realm of necessity.
Okay.
We can study the essential nature of a tree,
right,
its growth patterns and life cycle,
mm-hmm,
but we can't formulate a scientific law to predict when a particular leaf will fall from that tree.
So we can study the laws of physics that govern how objects fall.
Yeah.
But we can't create a formula to predict every instance of, say, a clumsy person dropping their phone.
Right.
That's because the act of dropping the phone is accidental.
Exactly.
It's not inherent to the nature of the phone or the person.
Precisely. And this insight has some pretty profound implications.
Okay.
It means that while we can strive to understand the fundamental principles that govern reality,
yeah,
we'll never be able to predict or control every single event.
Right.
There's always an element of chance, of unpredictability woven into the fabric of existence.
That's both humbling and a little bit terrifying. It's like Aristotle saying, hey, you can learn a lot about the universe, but don't get too cocky because you'll never have all the answers.
There's a certain beauty in that, don't you think?
Yeah.
The universe retains a sense of mystery, an element of surprise.
Mm-hmm.
If we could predict every event with absolute certainty,
yeah,
wouldn't life become a bit boring?
Yeah.
A bit too predictable.
I suppose you have a point. But all this talk about limitations and the accidental,
yes,
it's making me wonder about the bigger picture.
Okay.
If Aristotle is so focused on what we can know for sure,
mm-hmm,
does that mean he's discounting the importance of things like, say, spirituality or religious faith?
That's a really interesting question.
Yeah.
It's important to remember that Aristotle was writing in a very different time and context.
Yeah.
He was primarily concerned with what we can know through observation, logic, and reason.
Okay.
But that doesn't necessarily mean that he was dismissing other ways of knowing or experiencing the world.
So it's not that he was saying spirituality is wrong or invalid.
Right.
It's just that it fell outside the scope of his philosophical inquiry.
Exactly.
He was focused on building a framework for understanding the world through a particular lens. The lens of reason and empirical observation.
Exactly. And that's what makes his work so enduringly relevant.
Mm-hmm.
He provides us with a powerful set of tools for thinking critically about the world,
okay,
for questioning our assumptions, and for pushing the boundaries of human understanding.
Yeah.
But he also reminds us to be humble,
right,
to acknowledge the limits of our knowledge, and to remain open to the mysteries that lie beyond our grasp.
Wow. This deep dive has really been a journey.
It has.
We started with Aristotle's quest for wisdom.
Right.
His search for those first principles that govern reality.
Yeah.
We grappled with the complexities of being, confronted the limitations of human knowledge, and even wrestled with the concept of infinity.
I'm tired.
It's been a wild ride.
Yeah.
But I feel like I've gained a whole new perspective on, well, everything.
And that, I think, is the true gift of Aristotle's philosophy.
Mm.
It's not just about acquiring knowledge.
Uh-huh.
It's about transforming the way we think.
Right.
The way we see the world and our place within it.
So what's the one big takeaway you hope our listener walks away with after this deep dive?
If I had to leave you with one thought, it would be this. Embrace the challenge of thinking deeply, of questioning your assumptions, and of seeking wisdom in both the familiar and the unknown.
Okay.
Aristotle reminds us that the pursuit of knowledge is a lifelong journey, one filled with both wonder and humility.
I couldn't have said it better myself. And hey, listener. If this deep dive sparks some ideas or questions, don't keep them bottled up. Share them with a friend, start a conversation, keep the intellectual journey going. After all, as Aristotle might say, the unexamined life is not worth living. Until next time, keep those minds sharp and those questions coming.